That's the sweet sounds of Patty coming through your radio.
Turn up the car radio. Turn up the car radio.
Tonight on Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez, John Tatey from the AV Club, author of the fairy tale Chicago, Steve Wiley, and WGN Radio's very own pet expert, Steve Dale. And now, here's your host, Patty Vasquez.
Aw, thank you for finding us. We're not just pretty late. We're a little extra late tonight following the Blackhawks game. And we want to thank John Tatey for being able to reschedule for next week. And we want to hit the ground running because we have on the line with us our first guest tonight. No time to waste. We have Stephen Wiley on the line. Hey, Stephen, how you doing?
Hey, Patty. Thanks for having me on. I'm doing well.
Excellent. Do you want to be called Stephen or Steve? I'm just curious.
Oh, Steve, please.
All right. Hi, Steve. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, no, sure. I am a local author here. I grew up and have lived in and all around Chicago, in the suburbs, Albany Park, Elmwood Park, Schaumburg. After I had my two kids, I moved out to Wheaton, and so live out here. I've been publishing short stories about Chicago for years. The fairy tale Chicago is actually my first book.
And this is The Fairy Tale Chicago of Francesca Finnegan. What do you want to bring to life? Because it sounds like you've been in so many neighborhoods of Chicago. I'm guessing that you've sort of really imbued this story with so much of what you've grown up to know.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's a good question. I think the book itself is a new way to look at the city. And, you know, the book is really... It's a long overdue fairy tale for Chicago. I was surprised when I learned Chicago hadn't ever had a fairy tale, and so it's really intended for adults. But you know, a high school could probably also handle it. It's a story of a guy named Rich who's kind of depressed with his life, facing typical adult challenges. You know, he rides the Brown Line to work every day, drinks too much, kind of fat, failing marriage. One day he kind of recalls when he was a boy and kind of this adventure he went on with a girl through this mythical east side of the city. Chicago's weird, right? We've got the northwest and south sides. We really don't have an east side. So he rides to this east side on an L train called the Lavender Line. And I would compare that east side of Chicago to Wonderland or Neverland. So it's 11 out of 10 on the crazy scale, right? It's a place where anything is possible and where an alternate history of Chicago is told. So when you think about Chicago history, which is fascinating in itself, there's really, in the book, we produce an alternate history for everything within Chicago, from the Great Chicago Fire to the backward flowing river to Riverview. So this main character, Rich, kind of remembers this kind of adventure he has as a boy, and kind of in remembering that trip through this mythical east side, comes to change his own view of himself as an adult. So it really is a story about how to grow old without growing up.
Well, what an interesting way to weave Chicago's history in this, and including Fort Dearborn, and as you mentioned, the Great Chicago Fire, and obviously a fairy tale for adults. In some ways, you know, we forget that The Wizard of Oz was really a populist story. So this is kind of a way that you have of telling the story. Is this a little bit of the politics of Chicago, or is this really more the history and the things that have happened around the neighborhoods?
It's really more history and a look at each of the neighborhoods. It really, I think, when the reader finishes the book, it does play kind of like a fun trick on the reader, and especially the Chicago reader. I think after reading the book, the reader will feel differently about the city, and when they look at the city, and when they ride the L, and when they walk through the downtown, and in some ways, the city, you know, I hope when people finish this book, the city feels magical again, like it felt when you were a kid and you looked at it for the first time. And so, you know, I, as cliche as it sounds, I'd hope the book helps the reader take life less seriously. And I think it's a trick that the book plays, and it plays it especially well for the Chicago reader who really knows the neighborhoods and knows the city.
And you have a relationship, too, with the Chicago Public Schools because half the proceeds will be going to the schools. What made you decide to do that?
So my mom was a first grade teacher in Chicago there at St. Celestine's on Harlem and Belmont for about 30 years. So I have that personal connection, you know, but it's also just crazy how broke, when you look at the facts, how broke Chicago public schools really are. I mean, 75% of CPS schools don't have a librarian. 20% of elementary students are in overcrowded classrooms. CPS borrows money at a 10 times higher interest rate than normal school districts. So, you know, these stats, and this stuff is been in the news so much lately, which is good. But it really felt like the right thing to do and the right time to do it. And I thought the local reader might like that idea and like that their money wasn't going to some mega corporation, some Random House publishing. It's going back into your city. And we'd love it if we were able to, you know, cut a large check to CPS at the end of this year when the smoke clears here and say, hey, this was a great ending, you know, kind of a fairy tale ending for the story of this book.
And you also have a campaign that's going to be running on the trains, on the L's as well. So it's kind of a great connection, because once people can buy the book, they'll also see sort of real time while they're reading about riding the L's, this sort of ad campaign that you're running as well. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. So we have an L campaign that we're rotating. We're starting to concentrate it on the brown and purple lines. That's when the book is released on March 1st. But riders will see ads that say ride the lavender line instead, and then they'll see an associated illustration, you know, from the book. The book has 25 illustrations. So people will probably initially be somewhat confused, I think, or the lavender line. What is the lavender line, right? And people will be wondering what that is. And those ads are going to be concentrated on the brown line and the purple lines, and then we'll rotate those to the other colors. But we're going to have that running right when the book is released. So I think your listeners may recognize what that is, but others riding the L may not. But it's a really fun ad with some great art that's in the book that's going to be on those ads for several months in the spring and summer.
And then this book comes out March 1st. Is there some place people can find out more information about the book before it comes out?
Yeah, sure. I would check out my website, the book website, www.fairytalechicago.com. The book is available for pre-order on Amazon now. When it comes out, it'll be out as an ebook, hardcover, paperback, and audiobook. Everyone loves audiobook these days. And so you can pre-order on Amazon. We'll list that. But you can find out more, read the advanced reviews on our website, that website that I mentioned. And we're also on Facebook and Instagram. People can just search Fairy Tale Chicago. They'll see all about it. But as a thank you for having me on the show, we're going to give your first 25 listeners who email us at lavenderlinepress@gmail.com.
What?
We're going to mail out a free signed copy of the book if they just reference Patty in the subject line and note a mailing address in the email. So that's lavenderlinepress@gmail.com.
Lavenderpress@gmail.com.
Oh, sorry, that's lavenderlinepress.
Okay.
gmail.com.
lavenderlinepress@gmail.com. A free copy of The Fairy Tale Chicago of Francesca Finnegan, and you can get yours courtesy of our very good friend. I'm going to call you a good friend now that you've been so generous with your books. And again, this book is going to be available on March 1st, but tonight you can get your free copy. Go to lavenderlinepress@gmail.com and put in the keyword Patty, and I'm sure that Steve will let it go with if it's a Y or an I if you make a mistake. Don't hold people to the right spelling. And but on March 1st, where can people pick up a copy?
Yeah, so all of those will be available on Amazon, and then on our website we'll note all of the stores which are carrying the book. That website, www.fairytalechicago.com.
Excellent. Well, when we get closer to the book release, or maybe after, and I've had a chance to read it, Michael and I will read it. We'll get a copy to Esmeralda. It's like our little book club now is what we'll do.
I've got a ton going to WGN Radio over the next several days. So,
oh, thank you.
Yeah, and so if there are others there who want a book or friends of the show, I'm happy to get these out. You know, we have earmarked so many of these for local Chicago readers. It's for the Chicago reader. It's for the city. You know, thanks so much, Patty, for helping us just get the word out there.
Well, I appreciate you writing this book and being so generous with our listeners and with the City of Chicago Public Schools. We do want to have you in. Maybe we'll have you do an on-air reading. See, that's what we'll start doing. That'd be fun. Absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Steve. And again, everyone go to lavenderlinepress@gmail.com for your free copy of The Fairy Tale Chicago of Francesca Finnegan. Steve Wiley on the line with us. We look forward to seeing you and meeting you in studio, sir.
Thank you. Have a good one, Patty.
Have a good one. More after this. We're going to find out about Pizza Wars. I know it sounds so messy, but yeah, it's so delicious. On 720 WGN. I have to tell you a secret, Michael Heideman. Mike Heideman, however you prefer to be addressed. My husband is accusing me of breeding pizzas in our refrigerator. He says every time he wakes up, there's more pizza because I keep coming home with more pizza. Less.
I see no issue in that at all, to be honest.
I don't know what his problem is, but it sounds like in my very own fridge, I could probably wage my very own pizza war, but the folks in Niles are beating me to it. We have on the line with us Elise Berman to tell us about Pizza Wars 7 happening. Hi, Elise. How are you doing?
Fine, thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us. I know it's a little bit later than we had planned, but this is an important event coming up. I had no idea that there were so many students that were in need in District 219. Tell us a little bit about this fundraiser.
This is our signature fundraiser. This is our 7th year. And what we do is we bring the community together to help raise funds for the students. We have approximately 34% of the students in Niles Township that are just in need of everyday supplies. They're on the free or reduced hot lunch program. So Pizza Wars has actually, we hope to raise about $17,000 through this one event.
And I see that last year, so you're trying to beat your high of last year of 16,500. I like, you got to have goals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we do try to raise our bar a little bit every year. Mm-hmm.
And which, now these are students that live and attend Niles Township High School and also schools in the villages of Lincolnwood, Morton Grove, Niles, and Skokie. And I think there's a misconception, oh, well, those are, you know, northern suburbs, those kids are fine. There are a lot of kids who kind of, you know, the people don't realize that their families are struggling. A lot has happened, in particular in the 7 years since you started doing this, families that have struggled to really keep alive, haven't they?
Yes, they have. In fact, we have actually had two families that have come to the Education Foundation to help with their rent. So we have 50 students that are homeless within our district. So the need continuously grows every year.
And how can people participate? Where is this event being held?
It's being held at Niles North High School, and we're still accepting sponsorship. We have Niles North High School is at 9800 Lawler in Skokie. We have 7 pizzerias that are going to be participating in Pizza Wars, and that's Jet's Pizza, Lumonati's, Organic Life, Pie Five, Piero's, Village Inn, and Wapagetti's. It's $15 at the door, and we hope to have about 700, 800 people there for Pizza Wars.
And this sounds like a wonderful event. I want to remind everybody that the website is 219foundation.org for information on the location, about the different pizza joints that are participating. Who's had the most wins? Is there
Village Inn.
The Village Inn has the most. I love the Village Inn. It's such a cool neighborhood joint.
It is. It's kind of like the water well for all of us. So if you want to find somebody there, that's where you go to have your beer and your pizza.
No kidding. It is. It's a great place. And I want to congratulate you. How long have you been participating in this yourself? Have you been there since the beginning?
Yeah. I am one of the founders of the Education Foundation, and we found out that there was such a strong need that there was about 7 of us that started the Education Foundation. So we've just been fundraising. We decided to give Pizza Wars a try. It actually started as a stress reliever for the students for our finals. And over the years, it's morphed into this huge event. So it's very, very exciting that that the neighborhood has actually turned out and also volunteered to help with the many activities that are going on in the evening.
And this is going to be, again, Thursday, January 19th from 6 to 8:30. Now, how are the pizzas judged? Is there criteria? Is there the people who buy tickets, they get to vote, sort of drop a ticket in which pizza they like?
Exactly. And we are going to have 2 competitions this year, one for pan crusted and one for thin. So when people come into the gym and start tasting pizzas, they'll receive tokens, and that's their voting chip. And then there are vases that are set up, and people deposit their chip in the vase that has a signature of each of the pizzerias, and that's how the voting occurs. So it's the community that actually votes the pizzas.
Oh, I love that, because we were trying to, Mike and I were kidding about, like, well, how do we get to be judges on this? This seems like something we are well suited for.
Well, you're more than welcome to come. We would love for you to come to Pizza Wars and place your vote for your favorite pizza.
I think that we'd love to be involved going forward, too. I mean, like, with now, is this in the gymnasium? Is this like in a cafeteria?
It's in the gym. It's a very large gym at Niles North.
That's
and the gym is divided up in the pizzas, our sponsors, our voting chips. Our mayors are going to be there to cut the ribbon at 6 o'clock.
Oh, cool. Yeah, we get the mayor involved, then you know it's all legit.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, we look forward to that, and we're going to do everything we can to get over there. Again, that's at from 6 to 8 o'clock at the Niles North High School at 9800 Lawler Avenue in Skokie. Go to 219foundation.org for ticket information, and there will be all these great pizza joints. We're not saying who our favorites are. I don't want to put any pressure on anybody. Is it blind tasting? Do people know which pizza joint they're voting for when they taste it?
Yes, they do.
They know which one it is?
So they go up to each of the pizzerias, they get a little piece of pizza, so they get to taste it, and then they go put their chip in the voting base.
Mike and I are thinking that one year you need to try it without letting anyone know which pizza they're eating. I mean, I know some people will know just by the way it looks, but...
That's a good idea, too.
I'm just saying, that way there's no bias, because if I could walk up to a table, I know I'm probably going to be leaning a little towards Lou Malnati's.
Well, you know what? If you've never tasted Zilla Gin or Pie Five, you may be surprised too.
So what you're saying is Elise Berman is urging you to go in with an open mind, regardless of which pizza sign you see.
Absolutely.
And when it comes right down to it, all these pizza joints are doing this for the better of the community and to help students out who are struggling financially. Thank you so much, Elise. We really appreciate it and look forward to having you back on the show and hopefully see you on Thursday.
Thank you very much. Look forward to seeing you too.
Thank you. And again, Mike, I think that we need to go and be a part of this. You know, I was in the stairwell. I don't just do CrossFit and the stairwells for the Fight for Air climb. I also do it so I can eat pizza.
You got to maintain, and that's the only way.
I have to maintain. Yeah, I have to take care of that. Well, thank you so much to Elise, and we will hope everyone shows up at the Niles North High School on Thursday. Steve Dale, you can come in here if you want. Come hang out with me. I feel badly like he came in and like hid in the booth. He like snuck in. We want to talk a little bit about the Ringling Bardham and Bailey Circus and the great friend of mine who called into the show last night who had performed with the circus back in the 90s, had a lot of great stories to share with us. Steve Dale also had a perspective on that. I know that you wrote a piece about how elephants are trained and whether or not we should even have animals performing. You know, is it necessary? That kind of. Have you heard from a lot of people on this?
Yeah. Yes.
It sounds like you've been people have been yelling at you for the last couple days.
Actually, not about that so much.
Good. What are they yelling at you about? That implies that people are yelling at you.
No. I mean, if you think about it, so I'm the pet guy. I'm the animal guy. So it would figure that most of my readers, followers, friends would agree with my perspective, which is this. I don't think at the end of the day, elephants belong in circuses. Having said that, I think like a lot of issues, it's more than just black and white. I think circuses actually think sincerely, and the people who work at those circuses I've spoken to, mm-hmm. they're doing the right thing by those elephants. They're not. And the problem is the world moves, mm-hmm. and Ringling Brothers Barnum and Bailey Circus kind of hasn't moved with it.
Well, they're not going anywhere. They're not moving at all.
Now we know they're not, right.
They've actually imploded, and there's no longer Ringling.
But I think that's part of the reason for their implosion.
Well, and I think that as much as Kevin Burke thought that the elephants were treated well, and none of us can be in the mind of an elephant. It's impossible to say whether or not it was something they liked. It's like whether or not dogs who perform tricks. I mean,
there's a difference.
I know.
There's a big difference.
I understand
dogs
that.
Live to please us in part. Elephants have no interest.
But dogs didn't start out living to please us.
Well, they did. They evolved with people.
Well, they evolved with people, but they didn't. They weren't. So you're thinking that the universe, that God, put them here to evolve with people?
Oh no! Oh, gotcha.
More after this on 720 WGN. No, but that's the implication. Esmeralda, did I mishear him? Right, that they're here to please us.
Well, they are.
Well, I mean, are you thinking from wild dogs?
Right? I mean, that's the only other way I can hear that. Except,
but wolves.
But
wolves
you're saying that their
dogs.
Purpose is to be here is to please us, to make us happy.
In,
so then, therefore.
I don't know that that's a grand greater, master plan.
The greater being put them here for us. More
no,
after this on 7. You said that.
That.
You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. Joining me is the pet expert extraordinaire of WGN Radio, Steve Dale. Go to SteveDalePetWorld.com.
Shorter than usual.
It's your. Do you need help with your knobs?
I think my knobs on the chair.
I know how to fix that, but okay, you keep talking and tell us a little bit about what's going on.
You're gonna give
and
me
I'll
a
come
boost
around. I'm gonna
I
come
talk.
Around and try to give you a boost. Tell us about what's going on in Michigan that
is
just
that
happened.
All you're gonna give me?
Yeah, I'm gonna give you a boost. Go ahead. Just here. Go ahead and tell us. You said there's some developments in Michigan that we should know about.
Yeah. So let me talk about the shockingly bad news. So a federal judge in Michigan said. So right now, for all 49 states, other than Michigan, if you are a law enforcement person, here's what happens. You go into... Oh, I'm higher now. Oh, you walked into the garbage
can. Just ruined the illusion. I just tried to do that very stealthily.
You did. Then, okay. And then suddenly, I'm up in the air.
Is it too high now?
I'm never too high.
All right,
that's fine. All right. So it's perfect. So for all the other 49 states, if you're law enforcement and you walk into a situation where you feel threatened by a dog, you can shoot the dog. In Michigan, they said, that's not enough. We also want to give you an opportunity to shoot the dog if the dog barks, or if the dog moves.
Right. And who's going to testify that the dog was doing anything other than what the police officer. I mean, and on the other hand, if a police officer feels threatened, I don't understand why this law came about. How many police officers were being attacked by dogs?
Well, there is a backstory. Something happened, and then the people that own the dog wanted to sue, and this judge said, I'm not going to go just with this case. I'm going to make a broader ruling.
Mm-hmm.
And they contested that and then eventually worked their way up to federal court in Michigan, and that judge said, you know what? Here's what we're going to do. If a dog barks, it can be perceived as a threat just because the dog barked. And if the police officer or law enforcement feels threatened in any way, that's enough to shoot the dog, or even if the dog moves. Now, the grander issue here is that in America right now, even law enforcement has conceded that there is a problem where too many dogs are being shot. I have the numbers here somewhere, but they
you saw me typing because I'm like, how many dogs are being shot by cops? You have
a
the
lot.
Numbers?
A lot. Yeah, I actually do. Maybe in the other room at the moment, but I can grab them. And these numbers are really rather shocking. And a lot of them are shot where law enforcement is, let's say you're law enforcement and you want to get to my property because I'm the bad guy, but have to cross your yard to do it. And if you say stop to the dog protecting its own property, the dog may not stop.
Right.
And if the law enforcement officials feel threatened in any way, then they legally have a right everywhere to shoot the dog. Michigan went further. So what other states have done is they say, you know, we need to back off. We need to help educate police officers about canine body language, what this dog is really saying. Instead, Michigan did the reverse and said, we want to give you even more opportunity, more leeway, more excuses, if you will, to be able to shoot a dog.
So in Detroit, let's just go with Detroit. Detroit police officers in 2015 shot and killed 25 dogs. And by November of 2016, they had shot and killed 21. Now, on the side of the police officers, I can imagine that they're like, now you're talking about training and the mannerisms of a dog and what really is going to be a threat. There's so many things that police officers already have. And they're going into a situation,
I
would imagine that in many of these situations where there are pit bulls or guard dogs that are, gang members might have dogs or somebody that's trying to protect their home who is, doing something. This is such a hard one.
It is.
But it seems as though giving a blanket shoot to kill if a dog barks, that seems like a bit much. It seems like there should be some middle ground to this.
I agree with you. And I agree that at the end of the day, law enforcement should do what they need to do.
Right, to go home safely and to protect the neighborhoods, all those things. Right.
I totally agree with that. According to a 2005, I found my numbers. According to a 2005 study published in the LA Times, one out of every four times Los Angeles police officers intentionally fired their guns over the past 20 years, the target was not a person, but instead man's best friend.
Wow.
And since 1985, police have shot more than 465 dogs, killing at least 200 there in Los Angeles and the surrounding area. And there are similar statistics. You rattled off some all over the country.
That's just Detroit. That was
great. Yeah, but this is a building problem. And it isn't limited to Los Angeles or Detroit. It's everywhere.
Justice Department officials speculate that in a 2012 interview that the number could be as high as 10,000 a year nationally.
Mm-hmm. And no one knows for sure. So a database has been set up called the Puppy Side
database. That's the site that I'm on, right.
Yeah. I mean, you're absolutely right about this. So I don't know what the answer is myself, and education is part of it. Mm-hmm. But I do believe that giving police officers more leeway, they already have, in my opinion, enough leeway. If they feel threatened, they have the right, and probably should, have the right to shoot. However, as you know, as anyone, it seems, might know, whether you've had a dog in your life or not, a dog barking doesn't necessarily mean a threat.
No.
And a dog moving is what if the dog is moving toward you, happy to see you?
It sounds like such a strange case to come down through the courts and have. Now, was this a judge? So this had to go through the legislature, though, in
Michigan.
No, this
is a judge.
Has made a so that if other people sue, that's the reason for the judge making the decision
right.
This way.
Right. I believe that's the case.
Because Michigan hasn't made legislation to give law enforcement.
No, this is not legislative. Right. It's a judge.
Judicial decision.
Yeah, who said, you know what? And, you know, the problem is, so all these people, when I wrote about it, were writing me from all over the country, including Michigan, saying, what do we do about it? And I don't know the answer to that. It has to go through the courts. So legislatively, I know you're familiar with this because you've been involved with this sort of thing. It's almost easier to deal with the legislator and turn them around than a legislative body, than a judge, because then you need to go to court and all. And you're talking about federal court here.
Well, our friend Todd Belcourt can probably, and he's familiar with law enforcement and with social justice. We're going to be talking about the pardons that came down today in particular, but the pardons that President Obama has issued. But one of the things that I'm learning at the legislature in Springfield and General Assembly, and you're going down on Monday.
Yes.
Testify on what?
About trap, neuter, return of stray and feral cats.
Interesting.
Which is
rather than shooting bobcats, which they made illegal to hunt in Illinois.
Yeah.
So many things.
Yes.
So let's one more. Oh, a quick break, and then we'll go to news. And we'll welcome Todd Belka. We're going to take a break.
Woo!
And then we're going to go to news.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to break more glasses.
Oh.
You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. Joining me, Steve Dale's hanging out with us because I think this is going to be a great conversation, and there's plenty to talk about tonight in the realm of the pet world, but also a lot in politics, a lot in government, social justice. A lot of people, I was listening to another radio station, and I was trying to prepare for, I know, because it was so hard because I had the Blackhawks on one. You know, I was listening for the game, and then I was listening to conservative radio because I always want to make sure I know what the conversation is. And there is a lot of outrage tonight about some of the pardons that President Obama has issued. I want to know because I don't like living in a vacuum. I want to know what everyone is talking about. And I don't watch MSNBC and I don't watch Fox. I don't watch CNN. I mean, most of my news honestly comes from the Chicago Tribune, from CNN, from WGN Radio, from ABC News. Those are pretty much my news outlets.
And my website.
And your website for everything that's new and news. But when I have questions about what's going on in the legal system, in the justice system, and I did see our guest post something about what this means and how important this is when President Obama issues pardons. We have with us Todd Belcourt, who's a lecturer in law at the University of Chicago and the executive director of Social Change. And we're kind of colleagues in Springfield. You've shown me the ropes, and I appreciate that. Tell us a little bit about some of the decisions that President Obama has made today and in the previous days.
Yeah, well, first off, Happy New Year to you. It's good to
be here.
Happy
New Year. Thank you.
It's a pleasure to meet you as well.
Thank you.
The president, really, what he's done over the course of his presidency is do something no other president has ever done, and that's pardon and use his pardon power very handily and freely to make sure he's giving the most great, amazing gift you can give to anybody, which is freedom. He's pardoned over 12 times the number of people that the last however many presidents, 12 presidents or so, have provided the commutation and pardon to. And in total, it's over 1,500 people, 500 of which would be serving life sentences, but for the fact of his intervention. So I think it's important to highlight that. I think what's causing a lot of uproar today, there's a couple of people in particular, whether it be Chelsea Manning or whether it be Oscar Lopez or Rivera, where people are concerned.
Was now with Lopez, who was a Puerto Rican nationalist who was fighting for the freedom of Puerto Rico, was that the organization that he was fighting for?
He was part of an organization that's considered a nationalist organization. That's FALN,
mm-hmm.
and I'm not sure if you're familiar with it, but it's really the Armed Forces of National Liberation. It's in Spanish. It sounds a lot cooler.
I won't try to say it in Spanish either.
Yeah, but they were linked to bombings, but actually they actually claimed responsibility for some bombings relating to just the whole nationalist movement to free Puerto Rico and have their own community and their own sovereignty.
Government. That's right. With sovereignty, which today we know continues to be a problem for Puerto Rico because decisions are made without their voice and their economy is suffering. But do we know if anyone was hurt in any of the bombings that this man has been pardoned for?
Well, yes. I mean, the four officers were hurt in one bombing that took place in New York. And that's for certain. But I think in addition to that, just the whole notion of trying to free a country from the control of another is enough to be convicted of sedition.
Right.
So I think it's important to acknowledge that. And he did receive 55 years for that.
And he has served, Mike was just telling me, he has served 36 years so far.
That's right. That's right. He received another 15 years for trying to conspire to break out of prison. And so in the course of that 70 years, the president decided, and the gentleman's 74 years old now, that he's not a risk to society, to let him go home and be with his family.
And the other one that was controversial today that people are very angry about, a couple of people who were involved in military information being leaked, one of them being Chelsea Manning, who is the Army intelligence analyst convicted of a 2010 leak that revealed American and diplomatic activities around the world. Tell us a little bit about why President Obama would commute the sentence.
You know, it's hard to really get into his head in something like
that.
That's
this what I was wondering. Like, will he ever say, I mean, do any presidents ever say why they commuted one sentence over another? Do they ever say anything about that?
Well, there's no question that he timed it such that he will have an opportunity to discuss it openly tomorrow.
Okay.
During a press conference. I think Manning versus Snowden, people try to clump them together, but they are different.
Mm-hmm.
In that Manning did face the music, so to speak. Chelsea Manning.
She has chosen to identify as a woman, right?
All right. I was at the time but either way, you know, they faced the music, got their penalty, and are, you know, serving the time for their crime. And within that significant sentence of 35 years, you see the, you know, the fallout. Over 700,000 documents were leaked, and what's the net impact? And every Secretary of Defense in the last, you know, multiple administrations said, well, it's really not much of an impact. Now, in terms of what it means, in terms of a principle, you know, the potential national security risk that we were subjected to, I think it's important to acknowledge that.
Right, and whether it's a traitorous act.
That's right. But the bottom line, she was convicted of that. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's not really up for debate.
Of course, Steve, you can join the conversation.
I'm just curious. So I was watching CNN, and there was a reporter who said...
Fake! Sorry, I couldn't help it. Sad! Sorry. I'm sorry, now it's just a trigger. Go ahead.
You are fake news.
Perhaps they are, but interestingly enough, they were in Trump's corner.
You've got that on trigger now? That's amazing.
That's Mike. Mike's got that.
So a reporter who has been covering Obama since he's been here in Chicago, known him for a very long time, said, I'm really surprised by this because this is out of character for him.
Yeah.
Is there a broader deal somehow? Now, I know he's going to explain tomorrow at the press conference, or at least explain his perspective, but do you think that there is an alternative explanation here?
Well, I think in terms of just splicing the political hairs relating to this, there's no question that this is something the grassroots has been advocating for a significant period of time. People on the left have been concerned about making sure people who are activists and trying to make sure that the government's held accountable for some of their dirty deeds want people who you know shine light on these things to not be held to life in prison and in some cases, in this case, torturous conditions of solitary and confinement indefinitely. So I think, hearing those stories time after time and all the things that President Obama has been through, I think he may realize that there's now is within his authority to try to rehabilitate his image and some of the left folks who are out here who've been saying, you know, what has President Obama done for this portion of America or another portion of America?
Well, to that, I think on the these are just the two of the cases. That these are the you know, ones that people can kind of go, hey, I can't believe that he's, you know, giving clemency to somebody. Is it clemency? Is it I know it's a pardon, but it's not saying it's not exonerating them. It's not saying that they're now not guilty. There's a difference.
There is a difference because they've already been convicted.
Right.
I mean, the whole notion of a pardon is to release people for the full obligation that may normally run given the sentence or whatever they may get. So whether it's commuting their sentence or also pardoning them, which is forgiving.
So and forgiving their sentence, what is the difference between commuting their sentence, pardoning?
Well, pardoning requires both, but I'm saying, for example, in some instances that may make you eligible for certain opportunities that you wouldn't be eligible otherwise by virtue of it being pardoned versus just completing your sentence in and of itself.
Because a convicted felon has your citizenship changes, doesn't it?
It depends on where you are in terms of your ability to vote and the like.
Right. So if you're being pardoned and you're being forgiven, that can change your status.
That's right. Because in that case, if the president sees fit to not have whatever happened in the past hold you back from any other opportunity, then that's the beauty of the pardon, that then no other person has authority to hold it against you.
And I think the bigger picture, and I'm guessing something that you've been looking at a lot today over the last few days, are a lot of the drug convictions that are being pardoned or commuted. Is that correct?
That's right. And that's why the first thing I did was bring attention to the fact that over 1,300 people have had their sentences commuted, people who have served a disproportionate sentence given the action that underlied the actual conviction. And that's an important power for not just the president, but governors of every state to take advantage of. When you see people are, you know, languishing in prison because, you know, they had their third strike or some other issue and they've served multiple decades, save them from that life imprisonment. Let people return to their families and be a productive member of society.
We are talking to Todd Belcour. He is a lecturer in law at the University of Chicago and the executive director of Social Change. We're talking about the pardons that President Obama has issued and the commuted sentences for over 1,500 people. You say that this is the most of any president?
That's right. He's used his pardon power more than the last 12 presidents combined.
Combined?
Combined.
Had he done this previously? I mean, throughout his presidency?
Absolutely. He's only, this last rash, I think, is about 200 or so, but over in total, it's over 1,500, almost 1,600 in which he's used the power. So it's pretty impressive.
Does Blagojevich have a chance, or have we run out of time?
No, it's worth mentioning. I mean, people are definitely making the case in terms of this.
What do you think? Do you think there is a case?
I think so. I think so. I think, you know, he's served his time and he's you know, essentially been the standard bearer for, you know, what it looks like when you do too much and you get thrown under the bus by politicians from all sides. And I think he's been duly convicted and he's served some time. I think he should come back home and be a part of Chicago and so he can bring that good hair around here and make a smile.
Do you think he's a good example of what happens when what is now the case for corrupt politicians in the state of Illinois? Is he a deterrent? I mean, that's supposed to be, that was initially what we all thought was the point.
That's a great question. Because I actually think the answer to that is no.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a good deterrent. I think what happened was that he was the scapegoat for a lot of activities that still take place.
Yeah.
And so given that and given the culpability relative to a lot of things that go on now, I think he should be released.
Well, there you go. 312-981-7200. I don't know. I don't know how I guess I'm one of those people that, and because I have the luxury of it, you work in this. This is what you are passionate about, is what truth in sentencing is, what it means to be rehabilitated, what it means to serve time. Todd Belcour works very hard. He is always in Springfield getting in front of legislators. No, you do. I mean, I know it's a lot. Look, I go down there and my mind spins because I don't even know where to begin with folks. You know, the things that I'm passionate about, my husband and I just realized today that some of the services that we had a psychologist coming home yesterday to evaluate Declan, and we didn't even realize some of the things that have gone by the wayside
a
in the 18
son,
months.
For those who don't know.
Oh, my wonderful, wonderful son. Yeah, my son has special needs. And, you know, I have always said, look, you know, we're doing fine. You know, I go down to Springfield for, you know, all the families that are struggling. But we didn't realize until yesterday how many things have fallen by the wayside in these 18 months since I started going to Springfield. And you know, you need to have warriors down there. And I am doing my best. Mostly I'm listening, having conversations. I'm trying to figure out what to do next. I know that Steve Dale's going down and wants people to listen. And that's what I encourage people to do, is to be heard, to show up at your legislator's office, to show up in Springfield, to call them. If 10 people call their legislator's office, that legislator knows that that means that there are 1,000 or 5,000 people who feel the same way. But these 10 people have taken the time to reach out and say, this is important to me. So you have to be involved. You have to be a part of, you have to be a part of the process. You have to be part of the solution.
And I think it's also important that people are there in person to see the debates, not just because the final vote dictates how people feel, because they may see the discrepancy between the vote and actually how people may feel.
Well, and what they, even with the arguments that they make, that was one of the most stunning things I have seen, was Representative Scott Drury stand and make a case. He made an argument about the millionaire's tax and got weepy talking about his son not getting an extra snack. And, you know, how surprised, because and then he found out it was because the other kids got extra snacks because their parents couldn't afford to provide them nutritionally. And Scott Drury got very weepy, said he understood where many of the people in his district come from, and then he voted against it. And I was like, what has happened? And what?
Yeah, and I think in a broader scheme of things, you may see people in particular districts downstate or even different parts of the suburbs who may sympathize or understand uniquely an issue that we're dealing with that the budget impacts, but still vote contrary to that interest based on different pushes and pulls that may not see the light of day in Chicago.
Right.
Or
where they think their votes are going to come from, where they think that their donations are going to come from, support for their campaigns. And by the way, before we go to the break, let's take a quick break, but I just want to leave you with this moment. Governor Rauner today just donated $50 million to his own campaign today. More after this on 720 WGN. We welcome you to join our conversation anytime. You can call or text us. Mike will let me know if there are any texts that come in. Mike, you can let me know. Do you have any texts about the pardons? Do they have any questions, comments, outrage? What are you seeing?
Let me take a quick look at that, and I'll get back to you in 2 seconds.
While he's doing that, I do have a question. So here, maybe I didn't articulate it very well, so I'm a little confused, because Trump, for lack of a better way of saying it, praises WikiLeaks. Obama's been attacked by them and critical of them, if I've got that right. So it doesn't seem to make political sense in some ways. Some say, unless there's something else going on we don't know about, that he would do this. Now, yes, commuting sentences is something he's done, as you have pointed out. But why this one is the question. And I understand the social issue. You know, that she is very unhappy where she is now. She's tried to kill herself several times, apparently. Understand all that. But it seems, that's where it seems, as I said, out of character for Obama to do this.
Well, I think if you're looking at it in a most plain political sense, it could be seen as an olive branch to the grassroots left. Because there have been campaigns for several years to have that sentence commuted. And now this could be some way of honoring that in his final days and adding to his legacy in terms of being a warrior for the grassroots.
Hmm. Do you think this will add to his legacy? Or do you think even some of the Democrats will say, as they have been saying, what? This doesn't make any sense. That's not a direct quote, by the way.
From Democrats?
Yes.
I think the Democrats would say that President Obama was a great campaigner. I think there were things that we'll know as history tells us what he accomplished and didn't accomplish. I think one of the complaints about President Obama is getting the message up. You know what? Bragging. Just bragging about and I know that sounds simple. I don't know any other way to put it, but getting the message out of what was done, what was accomplished. I mean, he always wanted to work with others. He was always, and I don't know if that comes from, having to, you know, placate the people around him growing up, whether it was in grade school or high school, you know, growing up, whatever community, going to college, being the only African-American student. And yes, everybody, we know he's half white, you know, but also standing out in a group of people that he was different from and figuring out, well, how do I make this work? How, what's the best way for me to lead and yet not seem too aggressive?
But is that a bad thing?
The way he did it? I think ultimately
I think it allowed him to twist in the wind politically, mm-hmm. and allow the pundits on both sides to really excoriate him. And I think that's part of the issue. I think a lot of the efforts he made behind closed doors to bridge the divide and ensure bipartisanship were overlooked. And I think he should have been more public about those efforts at every step and every turn, mm-hmm. to be sure that there was some sort of accountability metric.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Didn't Reagan do that?
Well, that's right, but
like him, you know, or not, I mean, didn't he?
But it's, you know, as you know, it's worth mentioning that is a, you know, there was a position that was fostered shortly after he was elected to determine that we're not going to support what he does no matter what.
Yes,
and his recalcitrance in terms of recognizing that and decision not to really fight that head on and call it out early on, I think made his presidency more difficult, but also may really mar his legacy because,
yes.
at the end of the day. Mm. We are divided, but not necessarily because of his actions, but because of the fact that not enough people know what he had to endure.
And to believe that he was weak, that he fell through on promises that people suffered. I also think that as much as he was inspiring in his campaigning, I don't know that he was inspiring throughout his term as president, his two terms. You know, one of the things that, you know, if you watch some of the speeches that JFK gave, and that idea of like, ask not, I think it's just a simple phrase. Ask not what your country can do for you, but what can you do for your country? Because ultimately, that sounds like a very Republican frame of thought,
sure.
right? Stop asking us for things. Stop telling us what we can do for you. What can you do? And I think that that's, you know, a call to action on every turn. And I don't know. And I think that President Obama is doing that now in his goodbyes. Lace up, show up, dive in. Yes, that's also should have been 8 years of lace up, dive in, show up.
And I think as we have the opportunity to take a step back and observe what could have been done, I mean, he's probably had to endure more crises, more issues than any other president, certainly in recent history in terms of national issues, but also international issues. So I can understand why he hasn't had the time to, you know, do political calculations and why he should, or even the time to invest
right.
in, let me go to Congress and have Republicans called in again like he did at the beginning of his advocating for healthcare reform and call them out. Or let me do that on a regular basis, or let me make that like a common affair so people are clear that who's responsible for the gridlock.
Well, that brings me to Illinois. Who is going to call out our governor or our legislators? I mean, we can say that it's Michael Madigan's fault, but who is calling out this state and our government and holding us responsible for what's happening? I mean, there should be hearings. If we think that Governor Rauner is making profit over poisoning the waters and the bond ratings for the CPS by saying that they should claim bankruptcy, then we should be going after them, after him. If we think that Michael Madigan is making profit, and he is, he's making profit over with being able to lower the property taxes for his clients who contribute to his campaign fund, then we should be doing something about that. Who is going to stand up in the state of Illinois and say something?
Well, thank God for the media, right? I mean, that's what you all are doing on a daily basis. I mean,
your
morning show has a crusade against Madigan for certain, and then you've got other issues. You know, everyone to their own degree is putting spotlights on things that Rauner is doing, and including, you know, the station. So you're doing a good job of representing the voice of Chicago and Illinois. I think the question is, as this election gets to this next cycle, how serious are people about really making sure that they bring in a candidate who will actually change the things that we need changed? And I think what's generally done, you dilute the candidate pool. So you have so many candidates that people are fighting for crumbs rather than recognizing if we unify, we can take the city and the state.
I don't want any crumbs. I'm tired of the crumbs.
Yeah, I am too. So who would do that? Who would, first of all, who
but they're
would
not
run?
Doing it.
Secondly,
the thing is that they're not like they're. Do you see anybody on the floor of the House? I mean, like who? It's not
what
who's going to come in. I mean, who are some of the people that you see that are making a difference, that are standing up and saying enough is enough? In
well,
a real
honestly,
honest way.
I mean, I see a ton. I mean, I'm actually really heartened by the new generation, the people who've been there two or three terms who are really exciting and well-learned and know the issues and are really debating in course. and they're really active in social media, building a following. I think what they may be doing is waiting for quote unquote their time. And I think one of the benefits
is that helpful to wait for your. I mean,
it's not, and that's why I think one of
we'll be very old, I'm afraid.
Well, I mean, President Obama did not.
Well, yes, that's precisely what I was going to get to.
I'm sorry.
No, it's beautiful. It sounds better when you say it, so might as well say it. And I mean that, actually. So, but at the end of the day, I mean, if you wait for the perfect candidate at the perfect time, you may have too many things that can then sully you, right? So if you spend 12 years in a General Assembly, certainly you're going to take some votes that are tough, that may be hard to defend.
Build a
some
record.
Other issues.
Oh, I see.
So at this point, if you've got the principles and you've got really the record that stands by those principles, why wait?
We're talking to you, Representative Guzzardi. More to this on 720 WGN. I am, at least. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. Joining me is Todd Belcour. He's a lecturer in law at the University of Chicago and executive director of Social Change, and someone who I owe a lot to in all my adventures in Springfield, having given me a lot of insight into how to talk to legislators, really. It's true. Thank you. I'll never forget that day at the rail when you're like, you do not want to talk to her. Do not start with Representative Ives. Let's go somewhere else. Let's go talk to somebody else. Steve Dale also joins us in studio. I want to read some of the texts that we have first. By the way, thank you to the 205. Wow, I haven't heard Patty sound so positive and fun in months. That's very sweet of you. And thank you for listening, always. Where's the 205? Mike, do you know where the 205 is? Esmeralda, do you know where that is?
It's in Yugoslavia.
Oh, wow. That's intense. I don't think that's true.
You're pretty big in Yugoslavia.
I'm huge in the Yugoslavia.
I don't even think there is a Yugoslavia
I'm huge because they're very petite women in the Yugoslavia. So
Alabama.
Is it Alabama?
Yeah.
Well, hello, Alabama. That's wonderful. I love that.
Awesome. Wow,
I performed for 3 weeks at the Stardome in Birmingham. Maybe a fan from my days in Birmingham.
Maybe.
We also have a listener who was talking about the book that we were discussing earlier with Steve Wiley, who wrote The Fairy Tale of Chicago. And just, you know, there are a lot of great, I think that we'll all know more once we read the book. While having grown up in Chicago, I'd like to challenge your writer to check out a map of the city, and he will see that there is an actual neighborhood on this that's called the East Side. It's true, because I kind of grew up thinking there was no East Side of Chicago. We always laugh that the East Side
is... Is that near Indiana?
Well, we laugh that the East Side is like Michigan, but I mean, like, there has to be an East Side. If there's a West Side, then there has to be an East... Is this the East Side?
No.
I think it's where that term is. Well,
stop it.
I've heard people refer... I'm from here. Like, near
Indiana.
That's
a new thing.
East
that's
does not end.
That's nonsense.
Okay. With the
well,
and the
I went
six...
to the East Side. I got wet.
The East Side begins maybe if there has to be an East Side. You're talking about like South Shore. Where
yeah,
you're like
that's what I mean.
3,000 East or something like that. Not
yeah, there aren't that many numbers.
Or whatever it is.
Right, there aren't that many numbers that go east. Yeah. That's true. I mean, because is Michigan Avenue the delineation?
That's 100.
Right.
State Street. So
State Street. Okay, so that's the middle street. So everything east of that is the East Side. That's
no,
very small.
No, it's not. It's just the same neighborhood.
We're right off... We're right off Lakeshore Drive, and our address is west. I'm not going to say the number, but it's west.
But you're a north sider.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
You're a northeast sider. Can you be
a
northeast sider?
I like how that closed the conversation.
Yeah, really.
But you're a north sider. Oh, yeah,
but
right.
But you're a north sider.
Oh, Mike Heidemann has the definition of the east side.
Mike?
East side, according to the internets, is one of 77 official community areas of Chicago. It is located on the far south side of Chicago. Between Calumet River and the Illinois-Indiana state line,
right, that's
approximately 13 miles south of downtown Chicago.
Oh, there you go.
Thank you.
Now we know.
That too. Yeah.
By the way, we do have a name for our friend in Alabama. That's Andrew. Thank you so much, Andrew in Alabama. He said that the interview with the Lavender Line was excellent, and I hope you got your free book. For those of you who were not listening in the first hour, if you go to lavenderlinepress@gmail.com, the first 25 listeners that use Patty in the promo code, you get a free copy of The Fairy Tale of Chicago.
That's cool.
Of Francesca Finnegan. That's very cool.
Tomorrow I'm going to stand on the L platform waiting for the Lavender Line.
Are you really?
Mm-hmm. Might be waiting a while, but I'll wait for it.
Steve, I've lost the other text that we're asking about. Okay, there was a texter that wanted to know about laws in other states as it pertains to being able to shoot dogs by law enforcement.
Yeah, so as I understand it, the law in all the other 49 states is if law enforcement feels threatened, they have the right to do so. And frankly, I don't, in general, disagree with that.
Well, there you go. By the way, you, when we ask, we shall receive. And a listener is calling from the East Side.
Woo!
Hey, Myrna, how you doing?
Pretty good. How about you, Patty?
I'm doing very well. You calling to represent.
Yeah, you know what? Sam Panayotovich is one of us East Siders.
I don't know if that's...
There you go.
I don't know if that's there your you enrichment or your detriment. I'm not sure yet.
I like how she did that.
He lives maybe about six blocks away from me. We're right before you get to Hammond, Indiana, where the Horseshoe Casino is. The city extends eastward under the lake, under Lake Michigan, or south of Lake Michigan.
Under he lives no. under the lake? Is
no.
that what you
mean? No.
If you look at a map, you know, we are, you know, on the south end of Lake Michigan.
There you go.
And extend eastward. So there is an east side, and we are about, I want to say, maybe 3,500 east or so, 40 east.
Yeah.
So there's an east side.
That's well, legitimately east.
That's yeah, that is, you know, Myrna, as the first listener to call from the east side, officially, no one's ever said I'm calling from the east side, I have to give you a pizza. Is that okay?
Yeah, but actually, I'm not, it's not my first time. You always call me Myrna, but I'm the same person.
Myrna, I'm only going by what's spelled on my screen. Well, you've never said Myrna. Is it Myrna or Myrna?
Either or. And you always call me Myrna. I've said, you know, either is fine.
It's,
yeah.
What'd your mom call you?
Well, she was from Mexico, so she always said Myrna.
Myrna.
Yeah. The
Myrna. Hold on the line, and Mike's going to get your information so we can send out a Lou Malnati's pizza to the east side.
Cool. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you so much
for
listening.
For
appreciate that.
Bye-bye.
Well, not bye-bye. Just say hi to Mike. We have a lot of information to clear up. Also, the elixirs that you were talking about earlier, the traveling medicine shows.
Yes.
That's what, yeah. We actually did a, we were talking about the circuses and
You come an hour late and you miss the traveling
Todd Belcourt's like, we're shooting dogs? Esmeralda, did you ever go to a traveling medicine show?
This is a non sequitur between shooting
I mail
balls,
ordered mine.
Welcome to the inside of my brain. Also, the hooks that don't work for my bra. So here's I said that earlier.
You did, but I still don't get it.
Here's another non sequitur. No one's heard about this yet. So when I was in grade school, when I was in seventh grade, we did a play called Going West that incorporated. It was the most racist, oddly sex-filled thing I've ever done in my entire life. We had girls that would like dress as Indians and do like the ooh ah ooh ah and like, you know, like how and all this stuff. And I wanted to be the chief because I felt as the darkest girl in the school and because I could braid my own hair.
Let's stop there for
yes,
a second.
I wanted to be the chief.
Did you say the darkest girl in the school?
I was one of the dark. Oh, yeah. No, I went to, yes.
Have me people and seen
a-
you
me
online?
Me and Amy Parisi. I have to send you pictures of when I was little. When I was, before I was like, I want to say.
Were you on the Michael Jackson program?
Exactly. No, my skin got lighter as I got older. I was very dark when I was little. I know. Esmeralda, were you darker? Do you
I'm
feel like you were darker
cuss.
When you were
That's
little?
Not
I was
right.
darker because I would. Spend hours and hours in the sun.
Oh, yeah, that was right. Summer. I played outside. I forgot I played outside.
And the point of the story.
So I was not chosen to be one of the Native Americans. Then we were calling the characters Indians. But I had to be a dance hall girl. I had to wear fishnet stockings, high heels. We had to wear these dresses that were like low cut. And at one point we danced like the can-can. And we had to turn around and flip our dresses up. And we traveled with the traveling medicine show. Like that was our... like. That, I was all 12 years old.
Oh, my God.
Welcome to Lutheran School, my friends.
I have nothing to say.
Our Savior Lutheran School, Norwood Park. That was our production of Going West. I wanted to be like the prim and proper girl that was like waiting for the stagecoach. I wanted to be the, you know, I wanted to be one of the, no, Patty had to be one of the dance hall girls. As you can see, yeah, I'm still harboring
hall,
some ill will.
A dance hall girl at the age of 12?
Yeah. Well, not just me. There were a bunch. You know what's funny?
Like a can-can dance?
Absolutely can-can dance. Yeah, with like a, this. And there have to
How
be
does
pictures.
That music go?
But I don't even know. I'm sure we had a song and
I
everything.
Feel like you knew.
You know what's
I
funny? Like I can remember this. I know, but I can remember the song I auditioned for, which was for the lead prim and proper girl. I Want to Go Home. And I can remember the words of that. I cannot remember the song that I rehearsed and had to do over and over again, had to perform in front of my whole school, and had to flip my dress up and show my butt to the whole school at 12 years old. Yeah, I'm fine. So, yes, a traveling medicine show. Now you know why.
Clearly, permanent damage was done.
So just
medicine
a
is
bit.
Required after that, certainly. Yes. So having it readily available is important.
Exactly. So we were talking about the zoos in that now have, not the zoos, but also the circuses. We're talking about zoos and circuses, whether or not zoos possibly will go the same way of the circus, because is it humane? Is it right to have animals living in captivity? As you mentioned, elephants, perhaps not.
Well, animals in general, for some species right now, the only place where we see them, the only way they survive, are in zoos. There are a handful of species where that is the only place on the planet. And to try to reintroduce them back, there is no place where they are from that still exists. So you cannot do that. The other thing
that's happened, mankind.
Yeah, well, really. The other thing that's happened is for some species, the numbers are so low that the only way to keep them going, probably into the future, for now, is through the Species Survival Program, which is the zoo breeding program,
right,
where zoos internationally cooperate with one another. And they do a really good job at that. I think that overall, the good zoos do a... What's so funny?
Yeah, Todd. Go ahead.
I mean, what's not funny about that?
Right.
Pardon me?
You're right. I'm sorry. When zoos internationally cooperate to ensure the propagation of a race, that's interesting.
Not a race, a species.
A species. That's yeah. interesting.
Yeah,
at least
so,
worth a smile.
You're talking about not, well, because propagating implies that they are encouraging them to breed and have relations and create more of the same type of breed.
Well, I don't know that for a lot of animals.
Thank you.
That's what that's,
thank
I
you,
believe
Michael.
It. That's what.
Thank you, Michael. It couldn't have just been me.
Issue.
I know you're a scientist, and you know you're studying this on a different level.
Very important
level,
work, but he's saying you're asking animals to get hot and heavy with each other to continue the species.
Sometimes you don't have to ask.
No, but sometimes in captivity, some encouragement is necessary.
Absolutely.
Some enticement.
True.
Yeah. There's been situations where maybe, you know, I don't like the way she looks at me. Maybe she's got a bad smell and you got to encourage them. You know I'm not wrong.
You're not wrong.
I know. You just didn't think you were going to go that way.
But I'm happy that
and neither
zoos,
did they.
So I'm happy to answer your question that zoos are able to do this. And I think it's really important.
And from the 815, I think that Branson, Missouri would be a good place for zoos with circus acts. Interesting.
Probably.
I think that's a good point. I know we're trying to combine things now. We're trying to combine.
I think that
a stationary because it would
in
not.
In Branson, Missouri, there's every kind of old act.
And Yakov Smirnoff.
Well, didn't Ringling Brothers just fold their?
Yes, that's what, that's why we had we were having the conversation about elephants and zoos. See what happens when you miss. You miss a lot.
You're forcing me
listen
to
the podcast.
You're forcing me to do.
But I mean, do you have kids?
I don't.
Okay, if you did. And you do, Patty,
I do.
I'll turn to you.
Every year on my son's birthday, for Griffin's birthday, we have gone to Lincoln Park Zoo.
That's
every single
every year
since
my...
he was. Do you really?
Yeah, on my birthday, I go to the zoo.
But you have a different birthday than Griffin's. We never run into you. It's very strange. No, but so every year for his birthday, we go there. So you go the same thing?
Yeah, I do.
Wonderful.
Really? I used to work there. You know, and I that's my choice as to where I want to go is the Lincoln Park Zoo. When your kids have kids, if they have kids...
Mm-hmm.
So many of the animals that we take for granted today, including both species of elephant, particularly one subspecies of elephant, probably may no longer be here. And to me, that matters. But actually, if enough species disappear from this planet, it will matter to all of us because it will impact us.
I was doing a show one day with a comedian that was losing his mind about why we're trying to save bees. And the fact that he was taking it so lightly and completely misunderstanding what it means for crops,
we don't
for
eat.
Vegetation. We don't
we
eat.
We don't eat without
them. You lose the bees, game over.
That's true.
I don't understand how people don't understand pollination, cross-pollination.
Yeah, and the bumblebee has just been named, as you probably know, an endangered species. Mm-hmm. And this is
game
huge.
Over, my friends.
But that's not the only means by which we can pollinate things, right? I mean, I'm saying it's a significant issue.
It is a significant issue. It's a big one.
Certainly,
so
if we can...
there are other pollinators.
Well, artificial pollinate, right.
Butterflies, and there are other species of bees beside the bumblebee, which I speak of. But they're a significant pollinator.
They are.
And if they disappear, it will actually hit the world economy. I mean, people don't think about that, and you may be laughing at me, but it's actually true.
We are not laughing at you.
Well, you could be.
No one's laughing.
No one's laughing at you. I mean, I can't answer for all the listeners. Stop laughing. Stop.
Well, it's actually,
and stop laughing at me. No, I actually want you to laugh. It's confusing now.
Yeah,
we want them to laugh.
We want
smile.
You to have a good time.
Another listener from the 630 says wants me to ask you about the movie Petfooled. Are you familiar with this? It's about the dog food industry. Oh, you're not familiar with Petfooled.
No,
oh,
no.
A listener knows something you don't. I didn't think that was possible.
That happens every single day.
I did not think that was possible.
Oh, no.
So on Monday, we're going to be in Springfield. Apparently, I'm going back. Only because you're going. Todd, are you going to be in Springfield?
Are you taking the train,
I always take the train.
Yeah, it was hard to get. The seats were filled up almost.
Are they?
Yeah.
What train
Make
are you taking?
Make a reservation.
7 a.m.? No, I'm...
I'm taking the lavender line.
Which, no, what time are you taking the train?
I don't know, in the morning.
Oh, my God. So there's a 7 a.m.
7 a.m.
There's a 7 a.m. train. I ain't going on the 7 a.m.
I have to because I have to testify at noon.
At noon?
On Monday?
Yeah, that's tough.
On Monday?
Yeah.
Huh. Are you driving, Todd?
No. It's odd that you have, there's a committee hearing on Monday. We're getting in the weeds right now.
Unless
No. Is there a committee meeting on
there
Monday?
There must be, unless they're just fooling
me. Are they messing with Steve Dale?
I hope not. Steve Dale's a good guy.
I don't know what committee it is.
Mike's like, can we not make your on-air plans right now? Can we get off? Can we go to a break and make your travel arrangements during commercial?
That sounds
Fine.
Reasonable.
We'll be
Expedia and WGN,
I'm
same thing.
Booking Amtrak as we speak. I'm getting a hotel room for the Women's March. More after this on 720 Ooh. WGN.
Oh, you didn't think we can do it again.
You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. Joining me is Todd Belcore. He is the lecturer in law at the University of Chicago and the executive director of Social Change right here in Chicago, one of our favorite guests.
And a really smart guy.
Isn't it? It's a little intimidating.
Yeah, really.
And so are you, Steve Dale. You are well-informed, well-versed in everything.
No,
so many
not
things.
At that level. No.
I just make it up as I go.
As do I.
We, when you're in Springfield, be sure to stop by. I like Arlington's. That's one of my, I like some of their sandwiches are very good. I like their beers on tap.
Okay.
I don't think there's any good tequila joints in Springfield, Illinois. Are there any good tequila joints?
Probably not.
I don't think so.
The corner store is pretty decent.
Oh, he knows.
There you go.
He is a smart guy.
But well, when we hung out.
Is this the first time you played Kanye in your show?
It might have been the first, but it definitely won't be the last.
I don't think so.
I feel like that's a yes.
I ain't no gold digger. I'm just, just saying. Interesting. But when I was in Springfield last with hanging out with Todd and going to various inauguration, it's a celebration of the 100th General Assembly in the state of Illinois, actually now ramping up to
I saw on Facebook you were there.
Yes, I did. You see my picture with Governor Rauner?
I did.
I did.
Swear to God, absolutely I thought I was smiling.
Oh, no, you did not.
I did. No.
That was no smile.
I didn't know I wasn't smiling. I was like, because a lot of things were happening at the same time. But Todd, I left that joint. I left Driftwood thinking, you know what? That was a little intense. That was awkward. I told him who I was, why I was there when I started coming to Springfield. But there were two women at the end of the bar yelling at him, full on yelling at him, which I don't think that that's going to get anything done. He didn't seem to absorb any of it. He started to talk to me because I explained that I was from WGN Radio, that I have a son with special needs, that I started coming when funding was cut for autism programs and the Epilepsy Foundation of Illinois and all those things. But I felt like I hadn't had, like, you build up all this sort of angst and frustration with somebody who you kind of, and the same thing has happened when I've met Speaker Madigan, where I'm like, hi, I'm Patty Vasquez from WGN Radio. I had to go sit somewhere. I wanted to go sit somewhere alone. So of course I picked Saputo's. I don't know.
Which is like one of the preeminent legislator hangouts.
I just figured, because it's kind of a dark joint, but I did get to sit at the bar by myself, and it ended up being that way. But at the same time, I mean, on my heels walking in the door was Governor Rauner, who made a beeline for Speaker Madigan's table. And here we are talking about how Madigan never shows up to meetings and Governor Rauner won't meet with Madigan. And here they were. I mean, part of me really wanted to go and lock the doors and go, you're here. Just say things to each other. Talk about it.
Did they?
No. I mean, I'm sure it was all cordial, and I couldn't lean in far enough, but I don't think there... I was surprised there was no press following Governor Rauner around. I don't know if they're not given any heads up as to where he'll be. There wasn't anybody kind of following Speaker Madigan. I don't know if that's discouraged. But you would think that, like, media, the press, we should be on top of them, cataloging these moments of Governor Rauner stopping at Michael Madigan's table, don't you think?
Well, I think discord gets more publicity than
cordial
than cooperation, right? Right then.
So that's why no one cares about that little photo.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. All right, then, fine. Next time I'll get them when they're yelling at each other. Steve Dale, go to stevedalepetworld.com. Anything you want to say before I throw to news?
I just am so awed by you because you care and then you actually do things.
So do you.
Well,
then I respect you and admire for that as well.
Thank you.
And I'll see you in Springfield.
Apparently,
maybe.
Yes.
I don't know. Yes. Todd Belcour, thank you so much for joining us. Do you want to let people know anything like where to follow you, how to get more information?
Of course. At Todd Belcour is the Twitter handle, and ChicagoSocialChange.org is our updated website that's got all sorts of, you know, bells and whistles for people to enjoy and see what we're up to.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Todd. We will talk to you again soon, and I'll see you in Springfield. And Nick D is up next. Very excited. And we have Vic Vaughn at News. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago, WGNRadio.com. Here with everything you need to know is Vic Vaughn.